This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Support for This Morning with Gordon Deal comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You're confident when it comes to your work and life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same confidence when it comes to refinancing your existing mortgage or buying a home. Go to rocketmortgage.com/Gordon.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
More temporary funding. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Wednesday, February 7th. Welcome aboard. Here's what's up this hour.
The House has moved to keep the federal government operational, even though President Trump said he'd welcome a shutdown over immigration legislation.
SpaceX has launched a powerful and massive rocket and even brought two boosters back to Earth for a safe landing.
Another wild day for the stock market. The Dow Industrials yesterday gained nearly 600 points, recovering about half of what they lost Monday.
And despite a well-liked Super Bowl commercial, Budweiser continues to lose beer drinkers to other products.
They're going to a couple different places. I mean, one of them is to those light beers. Those have gradually become popular over the course of the 80s and 90s. That's a very long-term trend. At the same time, we obviously see a lot of beer drinkers turning to craft beer. That's been sort of a crisis for the big brewers.
Caitlin Dewey at the Washington Post on Budweiser's Hail Mary to its fleeing customers. The House has approved yet another temporary budget to keep the federal government from shutting down. The latest stopgap measure was approved hours after President Trump yesterday said he would love to see a shutdown if immigration legislation were not included.
No other country in the world has what we have, and we're going to get it stopped. And if we have to shut it down because the Democrats don't want safety and unrelated but still related, they don't want to take care of our military, then shut it down. We'll go with another shutdown.
The fifth temporary spending bill since October would keep the government running until March 23rd. The House bill does not contain changes to U.S. immigration law, which were a key point of contention in a partisan standoff that led to a three-day partial shutdown last month. The White House, by the way, later clarified that it did not expect the budget deal to include specifics on immigration. Another day of significant movement for stocks, but this time they were sharply higher. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Stocks rebounded Tuesday, a day after the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down nearly 1,200 points. The Dow ended yesterday higher by 567 points, a 2.3% climb. At one point during the day, the index had fallen more than 500 points. Volatility may be emerging as a threat to the bull market. The Wall Street Journal says the sudden return of volatility nearly wiped out the assets of some popular exchange-traded products that allow investors to bet on continued calm. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Regarding volatility, by the way, Japanese securities firm Nomura Holdings and the Swiss bank Credit Suisse announced yesterday that they would close two exchange-traded products that saw more than 80% of their value erased. When volatility spiked, U.S. exchanges temporarily halted trading in similar products. A successful debut test flight for the world's most powerful rocket called the Falcon Heavy from SpaceX. The 23-story tall rocket blasted into space yesterday afternoon from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, the latest milestone for billionaire entrepreneur Elon Musk and his private rocket service. The mock payload was a cherry red Tesla Roadster from the assembly line of Mr. Musk's electric car company.
It can launch more than twice as much payload as any other rocket in the world, so it's kind of up to customers what they might want to launch. But it can launch things direct to Pluto and beyond. No stop needed.
To Pluto and beyond. The Falcon Heavy's two side boosters, by the way, separated from the central rocket after about 3 minutes. Then the two boosters flew themselves back to Earth for safe simultaneous touchdowns about 8 minutes after launch. Each rocket unleashed a double sonic boom as it neared the landing zone. Congress can't pass a budget, but Elon Musk can send a car into space and reuse rockets. Support for This Morning with Gordon Deal comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. With Rocket Mortgage, you can apply simply and understand fully so you can mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Gordon. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Wednesday. With sky-high approval rates, marijuana is an issue. Challengers say will cure the Democratic malaise in Trump country among candidates running for the House of Representatives. It's a story by James Higdon, freelance reporter who covers drug policy for Politico magazine. He's based in Louisville. Jim, what have you found?
Each of these races had, I knew, one candidate who supported medical marijuana. And then as I began to look into the races, I discovered that their challengers in the primaries got on board. So in the Indiana 9th, for instance, which is southern Indiana, and in the Kentucky 6th, which is Lexington and the surrounding areas, all of the candidates, or all the major candidates in both those races, are now pro-medical marijuana, which is a new development.
Wow. All right, so does that mean that the issue sort of cancels out and voters are going to have to choose somebody based on another issue?
Sure, maybe. Although maybe the candidate who came out first in those races will get rewarded by the voters who prioritize that as an issue.
Yeah. So it's the same thing in West Virginia?
Oh, my gosh. West Virginia is the most fascinating state for marijuana politics right now. It's really sort of something. Because, you know, you think West Virginia is coal country that voted for Trump by 70% or very close to. So, you know, you have in your mind what that might mean for marijuana politics. But there are two congressional races. There's only three congressional districts in West Virginia. Okay. And two of those congressional districts may very well be won by a pro-marijuana Democrat. So there's an open seat in the West Virginia 3rd, and the Democrat running in that race is a guy named Richard Ojeda, and he is a retired U.S. Army major with three combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he is pro-medical marijuana and pro-decriminalization and is not afraid to talk about it and is getting all kinds of positive support in West Virginia for it.
No kidding. Jeez. So for these candidates, though, is it their top issue? Is this the one they feel that's going to help them win? Because it's not the top issue for most voters, I would presume.
Okay, so for Richard Ojeda in West Virginia, it's very close to his top issue. He, as a freshman state senator in West Virginia, passed the West Virginia, sponsored the medical marijuana bill in West Virginia, and then quarterbacked it through both chambers and got it passed, making West Virginia the 29th state to legalize medical marijuana. Okay. So he has statewide name ID there for being the guy who got that done. So now he's running for Congress, so certainly that's a top-tier issue for him because that's been his legislative success. And some of these other races, like in Kentucky and Indiana, it's not a primary issue, but because the opioid crisis in all of these states is so acute and extreme, the marijuana issue keeps bubbling up as it intersects with other issues like treatment and there's a lot of belief out in these districts, and the opponents of legalizing marijuana will dispute it, but there's a lot of proponents who say legal medical marijuana stems the dangers of the opioid epidemic. Mm. Fewer opioid prescription pills are prescribed in states with legal medical marijuana, that sort of thing.
We're speaking with James Higdon. He's a freelance journalist covering drug policy for Politico magazine. He's written a piece entitled, "These Red State Democrats Think Legal Marijuana Can Help Them Win." So on that issue, does it break down into support for medical versus recreational marijuana?
That's not come up quite as an issue yet in these states, although, you know, the polling is mixed. So the polling for medical marijuana in these red states is like, In all three states that I cover in the story, medical marijuana polls over 65%.
Okay.
In Indiana, it's in the 70s.
Wow.
Now, when you start asking about recreational marijuana, it depends on how the question is phrased. So, for instance, in Indiana, in 2012, there was a poll that asked Indiana residents if they thought marijuana should be regulated like alcohol and tobacco, and that polled at like 78% or 75%, something very, very, very high. But if you ask the same population, do you support recreational marijuana, that number is much lower just because of the word recreational.
Thanks, Jim. It's James Higdon, freelance reporter for Politico magazine. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
We're boosted by the sudden likelihood of a budget pact. Lawmakers are on track to avoid a repeat of last month's government shutdown, though President Trump unexpectedly raised the possibility of closing things down again if he can't have his way on immigration.
I will tell you, I would shut it down over this issue. If we don't straighten out our border, we don't have a country. Without borders, we don't have a country.
Trump's comments are seemingly disconnected from the progress on Capitol Hill. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
I'm optimistic that very soon we'll be able to reach an agreement.
The House passed a short-term spending measure last night, and Senate leaders are closing in on a larger long-term pact. Rescue crews are working to free people from rubble after a strong earthquake hit near Taiwan's east coast. The magnitude 6.4 quake that struck late last night caused at least four buildings to cave in and tilt dangerously. Several people have been killed, more than 200 have been injured, and more than 100 are unaccounted for. President Trump has asked the Pentagon to plan a grand parade of armed forces in Washington this year to celebrate military strength. The Washington Post says Trump wants an elaborate parade with soldiers marching and tanks rolling, but no date has been selected. The Pentagon says it's looking at options. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's sister, an increasingly prominent figure in the country's leadership, will be part of the North's delegation to the South Korean Winter Olympics. She would be the first member of North Korea's ruling family to visit South Korea since the end of the 1950-53 Korean War. Analysts say her inclusion shows North Korea's ambition to use the Olympics to break out from diplomatic isolation by improving relations with the South. Well, Mr. Rogers seems to be in vogue these days. Recently, we found out that Tom Hanks will be portraying the children's television host in a new movie. Now comes word that the Postal Service plans to issue a new Mr. Rogers stamp. The stamp of Rogers, known for his cardigan, sneakers, and soothing manner, will be unveiled next month.
Now you know you've made it when you're on the stamp.
That's right.
Mr. Rogers. Very good. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. While U.S. professional skiers can stroll American streets unbothered, they are rock stars in European countries like Germany and Austria, where skiing is as popular as baseball is here. Wall Street Journal reporter Rachel Bachman says the ranks and organization of U.S. flag-waving European fans have swelled in recent years as several American skiing stars have emerged. Rachel, what's up here?
Well, although the United States has a great ski team, particularly women, they don't have a ton of fans relative to Europe, which is really the historic hub of alpine skiing, downhill skiing. So what I found is that a lot of, for instance, heads of the fan clubs of Lindsey Vonn and Michaela Schifrin, for instance, are actually in Germany and Austria and other places like that.
And so what do they do? What do these fan clubs do?
Well, sometimes they'll meet in person and go to go to races. Most of the races are in Europe, and so it certainly is easier for them to get there than American fans. They do a lot of online stuff. One of the heads of the Michaela Schifrin fan club started a pretty elaborate YouTube page with highlight videos that he makes himself.
Wow.
And they have Facebook pages, and in Michaela Schifrin's case, there's a fan club page that looks very much like sort of her official page. It's not her official page, but if you Google Michaela Schifrin fan club, you will land in this on this website that is run by two Germans.
Wow.
So, Europeans are very into alpine skiing, and this includes U.S. skiers.
No kidding. So if you are a German who loves alpine skiing, you're cheering for your own country skiers, but if you're at a race, you're also cheer for the Americans?
Yeah. Well, one thing I found out that's really interesting is Europeans understand that U.S. skiers don't get any direct government support, actually makes the U.S. unusual, because many European countries have governments that give direct funding to Olympians or potential Olympians. The U.S. doesn't do that. United States Olympic Committee is run through corporate sponsorships, donations, things like that. It gets no government money, and a lot of Europeans know this, and so they root on Americans, and in some cases, underfunded Americans you've never heard of, And also, you know, they're pretty good. I mean, Lindsey Vonn is one of the greatest skiers of all time.
Yeah.
Mikaela Shiffrin is on her way to becoming that way. Ted Ligety, who also will be at these Olympics, is also a great skier. And so Europeans have really latched on to these Americans, both for their achievements and their personalities.
Mm, just like soccer. No, just kidding. The comment from Ted Ligety was funny because he said in your story, we're every country's second favorite team to root for.
That's true. Well, he made a good point, which is, you know, Austria is the kingpin in terms of alpine skiing. And so, you know, they're sort of like the New England Patriots of skiing. Like, other countries don't want to root for them. So if they're going to have another country they root for, they do root for the U.S., which, you know, historically, depending on the era, is sometimes an underdog in alpine skiing. You know, Austria has way more medals, and certainly the fan support in general is much higher in places like Germany and Norway and Sweden. So all this combines to make for kind of a fun team to root for, the sort of surprising underdog of Team USA.
Thanks, Rachel. Wall Street Journal reporter Rachel Bachman, 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Support for This Morning, America's First News, comes from Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, including runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4 and 33% on their life insurance. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/Gordon. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Glad you could spend some time with us on this Wednesday, February 7. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. The House approves temporary government funding. Successful launch for the Falcon Heavy rocket. Trump expresses an interest in a military parade. Kim Jong-un's sister will be part of North Korea's Olympic delegation. Josh McDaniels changed his mind about being Colts head coach, says he'll stay with the Patriots. The only good player on the Knicks is done, torn ACL for All-Star Kristaps Porzingis. And the Texas middle school student being called a hero. That story in about 20 minutes.
So darling, darling, stand by me.
Time now for a business update. And it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. Budweiser pulled out all the stops in its Super Bowl ad on Sunday, pitching its famous lager with a tearjerker of a spot on the company's disaster relief work for last year's hurricanes. But neither Budweiser's good deeds nor its slick marketing can camouflage what's happening to the once ubiquitous brand. Budweiser is in the midst of a long, steady decline. More from Caitlin Dewey, reporter at the Washington Post. Caitlin, this doesn't sound good.
So this doesn't apply to Bud Light. I should be pretty clear about that. But Budweiser, that flagship beer in particular, has just seen its market share absolutely plummet, actually for the past 30 years. But it's been most dramatic within the past 10 years or so. And actually 2 weeks ago, Budweiser officially dropped out of the top three beers in America, which is kind of a big deal for the company and for the brand itself. So, you know, you kind of look at something like that real tearjerker of an ad that they aired yesterday, and you got to think, man, they are really desperate to stop the bleeding.
Wow. What are the top three beers right now, by the way?
So the number one beer is Bud Light. So that is an important distinction there. It's not like, you know, Budweiser is a brand or Anheuser-Busch InBev, which is the company that's making it, is like really hurting across the board. They do still have the number one beer. That's followed by Coors Light and then Miller Light, interestingly enough. So it's all about light beer right now.
Mm. Where have those Bud drinkers gone, by the way?
So they're going to a couple different places. I mean, one of them is to those light beers. Those have gradually become popular over the course of the 80s and 90s. That's a very long-term trend. At the same time, we obviously see a lot of beer drinkers turning to craft beer. That's been sort of a crisis for the big brewers. And at the same time, the beer market overall is shrinking. We don't hear about this a lot, but a lot of beer drinkers are turning to liquors and spirits in a way that they never did before. In fact, the Distilled Spirits Council of the U.S., which is kind of the big liquor trade association here, just celebrated last week their 8th consecutive year of stealing market share away from beer. They were very delighted about that. So there's a couple trends sort of going on at the same time that have just hit Bud really hard.
Also, you had an analyst in your story said the writing may be on the wall for Bud. What did he or she mean by that?
Well, basically, you know, he's saying that no matter what Bud tries at this point, that brand just might not be coming back, right? You know, they've tried all different kinds of ad campaigns. They got a lot of attention a couple years ago in 2014 for rolling out this very expensive marketing push that was aimed at getting millennials to drink Budweiser again. It was an utter failure. And then, of course, we all remember last year that little marketing stunt where they decided to rename Budweiser to America for the summer. Also didn't work. So, you know, he's sort of making the point there, you know, a lot of people obviously still drink Budweiser. I mean, let's be clear, it sold 23.6 million bottles in 2017. But there's no reversing the long-term decline in this particular brand.
Mm. So is there a threat that that Budweiser as a beer could be discontinued?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, I interviewed the North American director of Anheuser-Busch InBev over the summer, and he was very emphatic that they were hopeful about the future of all their brands in the U.S., that, you know, while they were investing in craft and light beers and things like that, they were also putting a lot of energy and money into their legacy brands. So I don't think anyone's predicting that it's going to be discontinued in the near future, but, I mean, talk to me again in 20 years. We'll see what happens.
Wow. We're speaking with Caitlin Dewey, food policy reporter at The Washington Post. She's written a piece entitled Budweiser's Super Bowl Ad is a Plea to Its Fleeing Customers. So any firm strategy to turn things around for Budweiser?
You know, we don't really see anything coming from them right now in terms of a new strategy for Budweiser. I would say, you know, the analyst I spoke to about this particular ad made the point that the ad is very clearly not trying to sell beer, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
really trying to sell people on the legacy of the company and sort of the ethics and the ethos of this old American company, of course, now owned by a European multinational. But, you know, they're really trying to appeal to people's sense that this is a nostalgic brand and a company that means something and that they identify with. And that's kind of the pitch that they're making right now. You know, we'll see if that works or not.
Thanks, Caitlin. Caitlin Dewey, reporter at The Washington Post. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. If you like a little cynicism and sarcasm, you can follow me directly on Twitter at Gordon Deal. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, when you order a salad out, you're often asked these days if you'd like to add a protein to your veggies like chicken or beef, but few of us have ever seen anything like this on the menu. A Maine woman who prepared a salad says she realized after a couple of bites that her fork was stuck in a 3-inch lizard minus the tail. After first vomiting, then getting over her shock, Michelle Carr said she feared she could have ingested harmful bacteria. A biologist friend believes she found a blue-bellied lizard from California. Carr said she bought a bag of store-brand romaine lettuce at a supermarket on January 26th. The lettuce was distributed by a California company. A supermarket spokeswoman said it notified the supplier. Carr also called the state health department, but a spokesman said because this lettuce was packaged and shipped from another state, any investigation into the unwanted stowaway would be conducted by the FDA.
Wow.
Romaine is not having a good year so far.
Okay, that's fair. Yes.
The romaine growers are having to contend with a lot of issues so far.
Does the lettuce packager get some credit for at least supplying what appeared to be a tender lizard?
Yes.
Because she was able to get the fork through it.
She was, and
oh,
that's
my
true.
Goodness.
You could put that right on the package. Fork tender, right?
Fork tender lizard included. Wow. If you're from Maine, by the way,
yeah,
back off the salad. Just have the lobster. Come on.
Just nothing but lobster. That's right. What you'd be doing if you were living there?
Yeah, yes.
Look, at some point, you need to add a leafy green in there. Oof. In between lobster courses.
Wow. So had no tail.
Yeah.
But with the rest of the lizard intact,
yeah.
I presume the head was included.
That would appear so, yes.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
And we all know, Gordon, that nobody wants to be late to a wedding, but it's best to remember that if you're in that situation, it doesn't qualify as an actual emergency in need of help from first responders. That's what a couple of wedding guests found when, according to police, they called 911 looking for a police escort. ABC News says the identified guest called 911 Saturday afternoon in Palm Beach County to see if police could help rush them to the wedding. The female caller reportedly said to a dispatcher, quote, "Hi, is it possible to get a police escort us to the wedding because we're late?" The dispatcher refused her request right away. The caller, who seemed taken aback, replied, "Oh, okay." The Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office used the bizarre call to its advantage by taking to their Facebook and Twitter pages with this public service announcement. "We know weddings could be stressful, but please, if you're late to the wedding, don't call 911. Do not call 911 unless it is an emergency."
Why didn't you use your drunk voice when you were impersonating the call there?
Well, this was before the wedding. Are we sure? I mean, I understand that it's a possibility,
but I think
that would be more of her after the wedding. At least you would think. You would hope.
You can't rule it out.
No, you can't rule it out, for sure.
Out. How about these clowns, though? I mean, what are you thinking? How about if the dispatcher just went, "Yeah, you know what? The woman who just suffered a stroke on Main Street,
yeah,
we'll just tell her to hold for a minute, you know, until we get you guys to your wedding. How's that sound, wedding party?"
There you go.
Come on.
Sounds reasonable.
Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday. Bad news for Eagles and Patriots fans who went to the Super Bowl and put the price of their tickets on their credit cards. The personal finance site NerdWallet says it would take 17 years to pay down an all-inclusive ticket by making minimum payments only. And even if you bought just a $3,000 entry-level ticket, it would take you 11 years to pay off if just going by the minimums. Some 81% of Americans who have credit card debt say they'd rather pay their debt than attend the world's most watched football game. That's a savvy move. For those who buy on the resale market, it would take even longer, by the way. Tickets to this year's Super Bowl on average cost about $5,300 on the ticket retail site StubHub. Many Americans went to the Super Bowl with a debt hangover from the holidays, too. Only half of shoppers said they could pay Christmas debt back within 3 months, and 29% said they'd need more than 5 months to pay it off. 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Court in the House has approved another stopgap bill to keep the federal government from shutting down hours after President Trump said he would love to see a shutdown if immigration legislation were not included.
Without borders, we don't have a country. So would I shut it down over this issue? Yes. I can't speak for our great representatives here, but I have a feeling they may agree with me.
The House measure is the fifth such stopgap of the federal fiscal year, which began October 1st. The Senate is expected to take up the House bill today and likely change it, requiring it to go back to the House for further action, with a Thursday deadline looming to get a finished bill to Trump for his signature. An Associated Press investigation has found that Russian cyber spies pursuing the secrets of military drones and other sensitive U.S. defense technology tricked key contract workers into exposing their email to theft. The hackers, known as Fancy Bear, who also intruded in the U.S. election, went after at least 87 people working on militarized drones, missiles, rockets, stealth fighter jets, and cloud computing platforms. Employees of defense giants like Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, and Boeing were targeted by the hackers. What may have been stolen is uncertain. SpaceX's big new rocket has blasted off on its first test flight, carrying a red electric sports car, aiming for an endless road trip past Mars. SpaceX CEO Elon Musk, who's also the CEO of electric car maker Tesla, explains why he sent one of his roadsters into space on the rocket.
Maybe discovered by some future alien race. Thinking, what the heck, what were these guys doing? Did they worship this car?
The Falcon Heavy rose from the same launch pad used by NASA nearly 50 years ago to send men to the moon. One tiny translation mistake at the Winter Olympics has led to one enormous order. The chefs for Norway's Olympics team thought they had ordered 1,500 eggs from a Korean delivery service, but were instead greeted by a shipment of 15,000 eggs. Now, the chefs were taken by surprise when a truck arrived half filled with eggs, and the crates never seemed to stop coming off. Luckily, the Norwegian team was able to return most of the eggs.
Wow. Otherwise, they were looking at like the quadruple egg omelet each morning.
And morning, at lunch. Noon, and night.
Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Welcome into Wednesday. A Texas middle school student guided a school bus to safety after he noticed the driver was suffering a medical emergency. Six students from LaGrange Middle School were on the bus headed home from school when the driver began driving erratically. 13-year-old Carson Vega told Fox 7 Austin that the driver missed a turn and went into a ditch. Then he had to back up and started making circles. The young man said the driver was going off into a ditch on almost every turn. Carson quickly jumped in and called 911 for help. Another student named Kyler stepped in and helped Carson calm the other students. Carson turned on the bus flashers, jumped into the driver's lap, and drove the bus 2 miles on Highway 71 to a stop near a bridge above the Colorado River. Meanwhile, Kyler stayed on the phone with police through the ordeal. The driver's expected to be okay. It's not clear what happened to him. Carson said he usually doesn't ride the bus home, but his mother couldn't pick him up. She says there's a reason he was on the bus that day. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.